Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Good Monday afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. Welcome back from the day of love. No wonder there are a lot of divorces because, well, people just want to love each other once a year, and that's on the 14th of February. And this is not me being like anti-Valentine's Day and, you know, bashing on people that were celebrating, but is still going to go ahead and call you show off. So welcome back. It's a Monday and time to soldier on to make up for that budget that was broken for Valentine's Day. So let's do this. And here on Home Run, we as always come to you all the way from, we are coming to you all the way from the capital where we have yet another exciting topic, and that is a tax discussion on a global level. So if you are one of those people that laundering money and involved in illicit financial activities, well, today you are the subject of the day. Yeah, well, I don't think I'll, after watching the oil road cross-examination,
yeah.
I don't think I want to sit in that chair.
Why not, Helmut? It's a nice chair.
You have to stand for days, man, for days.
Yeah.
That means diarrhea is not a direction you want to go. So, you can't be a witness, and also, you have to watch what you eat.
You mean I have a weak stomach? A weak constitution.
Otherwise, the judge will be like, 5 minutes recess. Come back again? Really? Wow. So, let's talk tax on an international level. Now, if you ask me, this is one of those subjects. Look, if you are talking about, taxation on an international level, it did not actually, I didn't think of it in the way that Professor Ogutu put it in a lecture that she conducted last year in Melbourne, Australia, where she was talking about the UN Framework Convention on International Tax Cooperation, which is today's discussion.
Mm.
Now, one thing that she points out that for a very long time we have actually, let's just say to this day, we don't have any international, tax framework,
yeah,
you know, that is as legitimate as we have, take, for example, the equivalent of what we have, International Labour Organization or World Health Organization. We don't have one for tax.
Mm.
And kind of strikes you like, why? Like, isn't that the first thing we could have thought of because she really dives into the history of, into the history of the whole, international tax discussion. It seems it's something that the UN have been proposing for a very long time, but they have been receiving a lot of hostile reception, especially coming out of developed countries. Developing countries have not really, they have not had any sort of like a refusal for the establishment of such institution. There are only problems, organizations that exist that are somewhat like close to what that institution would do. OECD, for example, the Organization of Economic and Cooperation and Development.
Mm.
Now, the thing is, they are not that inclusive. That's one thing that that's one of those cries coming out of mostly developing countries. So you have developed countries that are reluctant to bring about an institution like that. So in other words, we can have an international health organization to make sure that we can jointly combat things like global pandemic, for example.
Yeah.
And you can have an international labor organization, for example, like in 2015 they had one about the formalization of the informal settlement that took place in Geneva, Switzerland, and our country was represented, and one of the things that they were looking at is that there is a
lot of cash flow taking place in the informal settlement. So you have to formalize them so that they can have access to things like to things like legal protection for their businesses, and also they can have access to financing, where AKA financial institutions, if they are legitimate. Legally, then they can have access to financial institutions like commercial banks, for example. Mm. So that formalization makes it easy for them to actually operate, and it gives them access to finance, and also protects them from abuse. And now you are talking about the legal aspect of things here. We can talk about that in terms of labor. We can talk about health. We can talk about. Well, we have Interpol, for example, cracking down on scammers across the, across the continent of Africa 2 times last year. So isn't that a good thing?
We have Interpol that was helping Afripol through the German security services to crack down on terrorists, activities as well.
Yeah.
Which highlights once again that us as Africa, as a continent, before I minimize into a discussion that we've had on Friday and a discussion at the start of last week also.
Yeah.
Because I tried looking into sort of like the meeting, the minutes of the meeting that ended last week. It was last week, and it also began the week before, meaning the week before last week.
Yeah.
And it showed sort of like, the comings and goings, the votings, the rejections, the applications, the submissions, the ups and downs of, having a whole bunch of member states coming forward and saying, yeah, I don't like onions in my salad. And another nation gets up and says, you know what? Why don't we just remove the whole potato and just serve onions and mayonnaise? And everybody's like, nah, we don't like that. Okay. Yeah. By the way, that was France. France tried to, have one sentence substitute like 4 paragraphs, and everybody was like, nah, that's not an idea we want. So, it was interesting to read that, but then, it's sort of like, piqued my interest in terms of what are the foundational documents that these guys keep referencing, which is like 2 resolutions and another particular resolution that came from 2015, and there was another particular resolution that also forms as the backbone document that all the member nations had agreed upon. Now, here's where things get interesting, Helmut. We've tried to understand in the one time that you and I tackled this discussion about this framework on the conventional for global tax. I just remixed the name, but you guys get the particular gist. But the whole agenda is to have a uniform framework that all countries subscribe to, meaning that all member nations subscribe to. What is interesting is that so far I've seen 2 active participants, the United Kingdom and France, who are both on the Security Council, being active participants. Who I have not seen was Russia. Okay, Russia did make a small contribution or submission somewhere. The United States was completely absent. I suspect the same too for China, because I also didn't see China making many arguments and the likes going on there in the discussion so far. So 3 of the Security Council members were absolutely non-participative, it's not to say that they were not there. It's just that you did not hear of them in the minutes of the last meetings that had taken place. And the last meetings took place at the start of this month. There's still a major event at the end of this month that has to take place at the 28th of February. But much of the deliberations, negotiations, and discussions, and you get to see how these negotiations went about. For example, like the EU guys, do you know what's the funny thing? They ask Poland, Poland, you get up and you speak on behalf of us.
That's on behalf of the EU.
That's not what the EU guys do. You, Poland, get up. Go.
Why is it always Poland got in the crossfire?
Go and make the statement on behalf of us. So now Poland walks up there, on behalf of,
you know, and which they even made, they even, there was even a time that the UK was sort of like in support of certain particular sentences and statements within the draft document, where you also read the UK as part of it with Canada, sort of like at the end. Then Poland gets up, makes a statement, makes a submission. This is what they believe should be, you know, this is what the messaging in this particular sentences or these sentences should indicate. Now, we're just highlighting to you, dear listeners, the sort of like the minute details that is being negotiated upon, how a sentence has to flow. But, and this is how you also see the division specifically about how this framework could impact, for example, the tax legislation within, let's say, the European Union or within the European zone itself, that economic zone that exists there. And then the AU gets up and says, nah, you guys want to change a sentence that fits your accounting systems. And then, and that's the only, there was only the one particular scenario where the whole of AU was, you know, was represented in a statement on behalf of, what was the guy? It was also a small African country that someone, you could see someone went in like, hey, get up, you make the statement on behalf of us.
Take one for the team.
Yeah, go make the statement on behalf of us. And, which also shows the divide between how various continents interpret the particular sentences to be applied. Now, things obviously then ebb and flow. They're talking about the basics or the direction that the English wants to take. I'm talking about the language, that English, not the people.
Yeah.
In the direction that the English should take or the text of the document should take. And then I decide, okay, let me go look in what are the foundational documents that this framework or these negotiations are based upon. And they're literally based upon, I get to the first particular document, which is the resolution, is it 77 something? Before I get to the other one that's slightly older than it, I just want to open up that particular document, that particular resource.
The new resolution?
There's the one from 2015, then the one that was made in Addis Ababa, then there's the one from now recently, 2022 or 2023, I think it's this first one. And they start off with a interesting sort of like introduction. All these statements, obviously, all these particular documents, which have, you know, global impact, start off with, we recognize and stuff like that.
Yes.
So this particular resolution from the UN, so that people know where this particular global framework comes from. And if you don't know, dear listeners, what this particular discussion leads to is that the United Nations Secretary General and I think the economic and what's that division of the UN, ECOSOC, those guys, they have recognized that, and there's a particular specific division in the UN known as Financing for Development. Is that they've realized that you first need to sort out the hidden methods, mechanics, instruments that illicit financing or the actors that support illicit financing use. You need to firstly address these particular problems.
Line that's with the SDG 16.
Exactly. And this particular resolution of 2024, 24th December 2024, they love using those numbers. That's why I never go for the numbers. I rather look at the dates. This particular resolution highlighted the promotion of inclusive and effective international tax cooperation at the UN. This is where we currently are.
Yeah.
This is the resolution that builds off the other resolution of 2022. And that resolution of 2022 builds off of 2015 that they agreed upon in Addis Ababa.
Yeah.
So 2015, they recognized you need financing, or you need a plan to achieve sustainable growth. So what's the plan? Okay, what's the most important thing that you need in development? You need the money. Okay, so then they realized, there's something about the money that is problematic. There are a lot of offshore havens. There are northern hemisphere countries that have massive networks of offshore tax havens. And they've got literally tax legislation that literally bends the universe to make things work for them and benefits only them. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, just go and read or look up a book by the name of The Spider's Web. It's written by two, a journalist and an economist, and how they uncovered literally the sort of like the dark web of illicit financial money that the UK does not declare, but that the UK financial markets depend upon. And this is money that can come from seriously bad actors in the world. And then the money is channeled through London and it gets washed. It gets put in investment programs across the world. And then those investment programs start generating positive, clean
money,
money for the bad actors who acquired this money. This can be anything from cartels to a warlord to a drug lord to a dictator.
Human trafficking.
Doesn't matter what chameleon or what color this chameleon shows up in. If it's a bad actor, it's a bad actor. So this particular 2024 document was obviously, as I said, inclusive and effective international tax cooperation. Just the first page states, guided by the purposes and principles enshrined in the Charter of the UN, reaffirming the resolution of 27 July in Addis Ababa, action agenda of the Third International Conference on Financing for Development, that specific aid, they say, reaffirming also its resolution of 2015 entitled Transforming Our World, the 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development, and that they recall specifically that they need to promote inclusive and effective international tax cooperation on a UN level. So, that's our premise. Our premise starts from that these governments know. They all know. It's not something new. They all know.
You know what this sounds like? It sent, at least to me, this is a classic example of mosquitoes having a conference to discuss malaria.
But then they are the cause of the malaria.
Exactly. Have you seen the Panama Papers?
True.
Those are the riches of the rich, the powerful of the powerful. They are the ones that were basically revealed back in 2013 to be the biggest money launderers.
Well, after the Panama Papers, what was the second one that came out? Panama Papers was because of that law firm Fonseca.
Yeah, Mexico.
That that was sort of like the main registering entity.
Now
that we're registering all these offshore entities.
Yeah. Now, thank you. Thank you for pointing that out. Because if you look at it, there are institutions out there whose sole job, like these are, you know, this could be accounting firms. These are financial experts. These are groups made up of financial experts.
Yeah.
Like the, now I think it's disbanded.
Which one?
The Fonseca. Oh, what's
that? Yeah, no, that firm was, that firm was, not disbanded. What's that term they use in legal terms? They were told to dissolve.
Look, the thing is, you have organizations like that. Like, that law firm, well, it was just a law firm on the surface. But what they did underground is something that, you know, they were basically, making it very easy for a lot of, or, you know, the rich of the rich, some of them lawmakers of different countries, some of them presidents, to hide money. Mm-hmm. They're basically hiding money from the laws they were telling everyone else to follow.
Yep.
Now, when you look at that, now you understand why that sort of like, reminds me of the cybersecurity discussion.
Mm.
Yeah.
Oh, we're going to have another one.
Another cybersecurity discussion.
Yeah.
Oh, dear Lord.
Oh, I got some riveting contributions from Friday's engagement. Don't worry, Amut. We'll get there.
Yeah, don't worry. We're gonna get there. Don't worry. You know, just be responsible, stay alive, and you keep tuned in.
Yeah.
Now here's the, that means if you have financial institutions that can figure out the most creative way to help you hide your money, that means we are going to face the same problem with cybersecurity. That means there are institutions out there whose sole service is to help you penetrate government systems or private institutions. So this is the biggest problem. Last year's plastic pollution discussion in South Korea, it didn't end, they didn't reach any conclusion because proponents of the fossil fuel, institutions were like, no, we have to dial down the production. Now, environmental activists were going for, you know what, we don't have to dial down. This planet is already dying. We just have to figure out an alternative ways of producing this product.
Mm.
Oh, no. They didn't reach any conclusion. It was postponed until further notice. Now, there's a lot of interest at stake. And money laundering is, unfortunately, is one of those examples.
Yeah.
Illicit financing is in its billions per year.
Yeah. And even recently with what's happening in the U.S. with the lovely Epstein files
that
were coming about. I mean, even yes, when you look at the sex offenses that, or the violations that specifically Epstein and co committed, at the heart of it was also how Epstein played a role specifically in advising on hiding money, hiding wealth, hiding various particulars, and he played the role of a confidant with influential people.
Right. Think of it, you know, it's a good thing you bring up the Epstein files, because you and I can barely cross the red line with meat.
Either going that way or coming back.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This is someone who is literally trafficking
people,
human beings, from one continent to another. Do you have any idea how much influence you need to pull that off?
Yeah. And sometimes it was under the guise of getting them jobs or getting them, for them to participate in something.
Yeah.
And it was just a funny thing. It was just completely a funny situation because, this was the 90s. This was the 2000s. This was even up until now, recently in the 20-teens, you read the emails of a guy saying, hey, you know what? I know a couple of beautiful ladies from the Czech Republic. They are waitresses. I can organize a couple of passports for them. Forged passports, by the way.
Yeah.
And I thought this was only stuff that happened in the movies. Now you realize, oh my goodness, forged passports is a thing.
There's one that made me sick to my stomach. It was an email coming from a blacked out name of again protecting perpetrators, blacked out name to Epstein, and the email was something like just came in, just came in, new Brazilian, cute and sexy, 9-year-old,
huh?
If you are comfortable using cute and sexy and 9-year-old in one sentence, what you need is not a holding cell. You
need to be blasted into space.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Just put you up on a rocket, and because that's just insane on a whole another level. But now, this is, look, if you are shopping for people like products, like your mental disability is beyond comprehension. But unfortunately, you have to understand that, to coordinate all this movement of having to literally kidnap children from one continent to another to fly them God knows where, and God knows how many of them survived after the torture of just even survivors are now trying to sort of like find their, the footing of their mental health, because nothing good, nothing that they went through is good.
Yeah.
To coordinate, if you are going to transport people from, from South America, Eastern Europe, and all over, you need a lot of people. Yeah, there are a lot of checkpoints that you have to cross. And you need to know a thing or two, mostly the department heads on all of them.
Mm.
So if someone is able to traffic human beings, trafficking money is even much easier. Because in the 21st century, you're just dealing with electronic transactions.
True. Or even like what happened back in 2021 when the money was found in the ground here in the Omaheke region.
I mean, that's the oldest mode of banking.
Hide it in the ground. But yeah. When you
look at it, the first thing that you see is, combating, establishing this institution is going to take a lot of courage, And even after, you know, now, if I can take you back to 1999, 98, 2000, the US fought tooth and nails to prevent the establishment of the ICC. Now, again, that's just well documented. It's all over the internet. You can read it up. Now, the thing is, anything that threatens, you know, anything that threatens someone's interest, they are obviously going to fight against it. And a lot of very rich and powerful, unfortunately, are not known to be very good taxpayers. And avoiding them is something that they are very good at. And you can blame them, but you can also blame a lot of different countries because of the lack of international established tax legislations. Why? Because this one has 26% corporate tax. And this other country has 0% corporate tax. Now, if you were running a corporation, don't point any fingers, just you were running a corporation. Would you be willingly walk into a country that has 26% corporate tax when there's an option of a 0% corporate tax?
And which is also the other particular thing of, oh no, I'm already registered in this particular jurisdiction. And I'm registered there with you. Mm-hmm. But because I pay tax first here, which is where the 0% is.
Oh yeah.
I'm picking not to pay you.
Yeah.
In that
because
regard.
I've already paid there.
Because I've already paid over here, which is at 0%.
That's the
which is nothing as
that's the technicality
that's
being used by a lot of Western companies that have supposedly withdrawn, quote unquote, out of Russia, but they're still there. So what happened? Pick one company, for example. Let's just use Helmut is a brand that was sold in Russia before 24 February 2022. And all of a sudden, now Kazakhstan is a neighboring country to Russia, and this product Kazakhstan was only buying maybe 2 million units, but after the banning of this, after I supposedly withdrew out of Russia, then all of a sudden Kazakhstan is buying 20 million units. Really?
Really?
And who's Kazakhstan's biggest customer? Russia. Now, did you really withdraw? No, you didn't. And now it's the same thing that you see with with Russian oil and how they were trading it with trading it with India.
Mm.
It's technicality. It has to do with delivery and ownership, law of property 101.
Mm.
As soon as I pay, as soon as you make the transaction, and I give you the product. If it's in international waters, even if you can see it when you're standing from a host country that I was supposed to buy it from, by the way, I didn't buy it from. Technically, it's yours.
But technically, it's not yet yours.
Technicality is very easy to exploit. That's why, that's why you find a lot of countries that will just, go there, they'll just show up at your house to buy something. If it's something that's illegal, first of all, you shouldn't be selling it.
Mm.
Two, ownership, the definition of ownership in law of property will give you a headache. Just defining what two things, ownership and delivery. These two will give you a headache. So, look. Tax evasions is not something that is new. The world have always known about tax evasions. And one thing that I'm not sure if that was during COVID Panama Papers.
Mm.
That's when one of the many methods of evading tax, avoiding tax, not evading, avoiding tax is one one that went super viral was the double Irish with a Dutch sandwich. These guys use a maze of, from operating company to holding. By the time that they get to the third operating to holding level, you and I that are not well versed in this subject are already lost.
Yep.
But these guys, that's literally what they do. Start a shell corporation. And then that takes us to South Africa and the whole, and the whole Tembisa Hospital. Back in August of 2021 or 2022, How many shell corporations did the late Bobita Diokor in a flag? Over 200 of them. And these were just companies on paper.
And they were just associated to one job.
Yep.
One construction job.
Procurement. And these guys were milking that hospital of millions and millions of dollars. That totaled up to, I think, when the hearing started, it was about 2 point something billion.
Just, and these were just 200, and it was, what was it, the same guy, Kat?
Yeah, well, so far he's just the guy that's seen as the mastermind, but chances are very high. It's
there are more people.
Yeah, there are more people involved. And yeah. And that's the thing. This is the Epstein file all over again. These are people that are rich and powerful. Holding them accountable is almost non-existent. Mm. And yeah, sometimes I find myself demonizing these guys, but then deep inside, I'm asking myself, if I had the power, would I really behave? I know that I misbehave with a $1,000. I can only imagine me with $1 million.
What about with 10 million?
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, I'll know what I will do. But I don't know yet.
Look,
have the 10 million.
Look, I know what I will do now, but the thing about me is that my middle of the month plans and my month end plans are more often in conflict with one another. My best financial decision is right now, this time of the month. Come on, then they all live out through the window. It's one damn decision after the other.
Well, you know,
all of a sudden I lose appetite for home cooked meal.
True, you know, for like a week, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. You know, you just lose appetite. But yeah, another thing that's also significant in this discussion was also how they laid out the how all this particular negotiation process still has to go on. Because the interesting thing is, if you look at the time frame of things, the convention, the framework convention on international tax cooperation, and this intergovernmental committee, ad hoc committee that had to be established, they have to meet in 2025, 2026, and 2027 for at least 3 substantive sessions per year. So this means this is not yet done and dusted in 2026. This is not a conversation that is final in 2026. It is a conversation that will still persist into 2027. Now, still in this particular notion, Helmut, this ties in to the talk that we had on Friday, the amendments that the Minister of Mines and Energy and Industries motivated in the week, not in last week, the week before last week, and also the EITI discussion. That was held in Namibia as well in the week before last week. So, we see developments around natural resources. Who are the entities that operate cross-border in many scenarios? It is multinational companies. Who does the EITI platform technically wish to bring transparency, accountability, and improved governance about? Specifically about the extractive industries, because it is the extractive industries that's also targeted the most.
Yeah.
And primarily where a lot of accusations are based upon that it's the extractive industries that are the ones evading taxes, royalties.
We have a booming tech industry, so.
That too. Because the accusation is that it's the private sector industries that are evading taxes, paying taxes on the royalties or paying various kinds of particular owed monies to the state coffers. And these various conversations will keep coming up specifically until a decision is made, obviously, in terms of yes, no, I don't agree, or yes, no, we wish to apply and not apply, but fully apply, or not fully apply in those particular lines. They all play a significant role, because here's the thing, Helmut. We have not measured in Namibia as yet the strength or the power of what is that thing that they measured in Philippines 2 years back? What is that word in accounting? Not reconciliations.
Yeah, I don't think that's accounting.
But it's an accounting term. It's a financial term. But it's where you, yeah. Okay, they do reconcile.
Yeah, reconciliation statement. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, they do reconcile an activity in accounting or in a financial department. But that has to do more with the banking statements. You know, you take a look at payments coming in and how do those payments match up to who owes you what money. And the word I'm trying to think about is remittances.
Yes.
So we haven't really looked at remittances in Namibia.
What's that in government school English?
Okay. Remittances is if you work, let's say remittances also take place in Namibia.
Yeah.
You are in Windhoek, Helmut. Your younger brother asks you for money there in Difundu.
Yeah.
You send him money. That's a remittance.
Oh.
You didn't generate the money in Difundu.
Mm.
You generated the money in Windhoek.
Yeah.
He asks you by text message, Helmut, could you help me with X amount of money? You send, and that becomes a remittance. Now, a once-off is a once-off. You can ignore it. But if it's an activity that you have to do every month or every week, then it becomes a pattern.
Yeah.
That means money is moving from one spot to another geographic spot. Now, imagine this being money moving across a border in the same format for the same needs. Sending money back to family to ensure that they can still maintain livelihoods and they can still, you know, eat and survive back home and for them to engage in activities. One of the biggest countries of who are literally carrying the country's whole economy just with remittances.
Yeah.
Is the Philippines. Because of the...
A lot of them are abroad.
Because a lot of them find themselves in the Middle East, for example, in Dubai.
Yeah.
And in many of those Middle Eastern economies right there, in terms of doing work. Because if you hear weird things, for example, like the report I heard about where the people in Oman or it's Qatar, they don't want to do the work. They don't want to work. Because if your country is producing all this oil and your government is paying you guys a basic income grant every month, why would you go and work?
That's just good enough for you to live on. What's the point?
Yeah, why would you go and work? And I mean, if your way of life is not a way of life of dressing in the latest, brands and stuff like that, you know, you're just wearing basic stuff, which lasts you very long, then you don't have a major need for many consumer goods. And it later on became a scenario where they have to import labor. Now, the human rights, civil society, and non-governmental organizations from Europe and North America, they were annoyed at countries like Qatar, who hosted the World Cup in 2022, for having a large foreign workforce, specifically in the construction sector.
Their soccer stadiums, I remember
that. Exactly. And when you look at, okay, can the Qataris do the work of the foreign construction workers that were there?
No.
In many cases, you will find out that they had insufficient supply, firstly, meaning not all Qataris were going to work in the construction sector.
But you also have to understand that it's a monarchy, so the women are not going to be found at the site.
Definitely, you will not find a gender parity or gender balance on the construction site there. And if you do find a woman working on the construction site in Qatar or in Oman or in the UAE or in Kuwait, it would be a Filipino or a Malay or from India or a Pakistani person. It won't be a local person. So the concern literally that you can see is, and this is one of the particular narratives that were thrown out there. It was just blasted across, for example, the international news platforms like the BBC, the CNN, and so on, that the Qataris are mistreating foreign workers.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. The local Qataris don't want to do the jobs. Firstly, it's a shortage. Second, a shortage of the Qataris. Secondly, it's...
As in they don't have a population big enough.
Yeah. And secondly, they wish to have they have these plans, which are so high, and for them to finish these projects and plans with their own financing, obviously, there's a shortfall on the skills that they need. So obviously you will use labor hire agencies. Situation comes to the fore. Then you find out there's a lot of Filipinos and Thais working in the Middle East. They earn their monies and they send all that money back to, back home. Those economies run on remittances. Remittances cannot be perceived as illicit financing. Actually, Hamoud, it has now become sort of like the biggest source of financing for many countries, specifically in the Middle East. It's just you don't see the same thing being measured in Africa because there's a whole bunch of Africans working in Europe. Secondly, also, we've got a whole bunch of Africans that get blocked. What I mean by getting blocked is they can't go and work in these lovely financial hubs that have these lovely valuable monies that you can send back home here to Africa. Mm. For example, Hamoud, I mean, if anyone has flown through the Dubai airport, you don't see many Africans working there. You don't.
It's Middle Easterners or Asians.
It's mostly people from Far East Asia, Middle Easterners, either from India, either from Pakistan, who operate that airport. You land at Addis, it's just Ethiopians. Obviously, it's Ethiopia's airport.
Yeah.
But when you try and look at how an airport has to play an economic role to connecting other sectors, which it does, first and foremost, you don't see Africans anywhere. Now, the more politically inclined listener that we would have would think, you know what, that's racism by the world. But the world is already discriminating against us as Africans.
Yeah, doesn't...
I mean, I get asked at every corner where I've gone, are you really Namibian?
Must be complicated having a light skin because now we have to explain all the time.
I mean, guys, you guys don't know. But yeah, it makes it difficult. So, it's a conversation that has us on the back foot already as Africans. Yeah. And obviously when we have got to look at the illicit flows of financing or the illicit flow of money across the world, across the borders, at the heart of everything is also how the Africans sort out internal issues with themselves. Now, it is all good and well that, for example, the sentence that I'm reading from the 2024 resolution, the December 2024 resolution that I still mentioned about a little bit earlier, where they say here, it also decides that the Bureau of the Intergovernmental Negotiating Committee shall consist of the chair, 18 vice chairs, and a rapporteur, elected on the basis of equitable geographical representations and taking into account gender balance. I'm just going to focus on that thing specifically.
Yeah.
Now, our continent is known for extraction, Helmut.
Unfortunately, yes.
There's but two countries on this African continent that are known for banking services. And you can throw Namibia and Botswana into there as well. Mm. Factoring in the conversation we had last week about the SACU SADC AFCFTA scenario that kicked off at the World Economic Forum, where the two South Africans Mene and Strydom highlighted that the continent has to change its perspective about itself, meaning. Okay, the old mutual guy, Strydom, highlighted, it's difficult to think on the individual identities of each market in the African continent. Meaning, if you look at Africa, don't go and think about, it's difficult to think about 54 economies with 54 identities currencies. And 54 different currencies.
Yeah.
Whereas if Africa sorted out its economic principles and its economic foundations, 54 countries, but you've got a single market approach,
yeah,
or single economy approach, much like the European scenario. Now, it makes things difficult, and I understand what Strato meant, because your strategic plan becomes a lot easier if you look at the African continent as one, which also means the regulations, the legislations, the rules, the laws, and so forth and so forth. However, a major roadblock pops up, Helmut, and we still have to deal with this because I think it's one of the particular sort of like oversight committees from a standing committee visit to, I think it was the SADC plenary scenario, but there's also an AU one, where the Pan-African Parliament and the heads of state, sort of like, what's the name for the heads of state grouping in SADC, in the AU? But let's just say that platform where the heads of state currently were this past weekend in Addis, and the Pan-African Parliament, which goes to Pretoria, or is it Johannesburg, every year, how these two AU instruments speak to each other. Now, the heads of state guys go and decide. They go and decide on a theme.
Mm-hmm. A theme on
water and sanitation. Somernetso, just like that. And then the Pan-African Parliament guys only meet here in, I think, March, April.
Yeah.
And then in March and April, they're more debating upon who speaks French, who speaks Portuguese, who speaks Arabic, and who speaks English.
Translation, they're busy debating on who colonized who instead of solving today's problem.
True. Second, adding on to that particular aspect of differences, differences in opinion and differences in thinking, mm-hmm, is also the discussion about how do you pass laws in that platform?
Yeah, if, that's not gonna be easy.
If the heads of state here at that meet in Addis every year decide on things in a different direction.
No, you can't.
The heads of state move further and faster than a whole bunch of parliamentarians from all 54 nations on the continent move when they meet up every year in this particular organ.
You know, that's the Pan-African Parliament, for me, is the reason why I'm an advocate of economic union, not political union. You are not going to... That's, you can forget about that.
Same here as well.
United States of Africa, yeah, look, well, dreams are for free. Go ahead.
I wouldn't want to copy that name, Helmut.
You have any idea how many times you ran into that nonsense on Facebook?
No, but I don't want to copy that name.
It's not just about the name, like uniting Africa on a political level. All we just have to do to understand that that's more of a fantasy,
yeah,
is look at how many African, how different all these countries are politically.
And
then you ask yourself, first of all, we'll spend 100 years to discuss where the capital city is going to be and who is going to be the president. Now that will take until Jesus comes.
And who's going to have the hub of everything.
Uh-huh.
Because remember, The Hague has a different function of the European Union.
Mm-hmm.
And The Hague is literally where the monarchy of the Netherlands resides.
Different of the European and different from Brussels.
Different from Brussels, yeah. The Hague has a function there as well, which is also the function where the International Criminal Court is.
Yeah.
But The Hague is a different function as well. You've got Brussels that acts as a different function.
Mm-hmm.
The EU Parliament, the EU Council, the EU, what was the other one's name? The Central Bank is in Germany, I think.
Of the EU.
The ECB, the European Central Bank. I think that's in Germany, in Berlin. Where's the other? There's another organ that's somewhere else of the European Union.
Hang on a second. They decided to put their man in Germany?
Because it's the German. The Germans convinced the guys. Listen, we have the biggest manufacturing base. And the Europeans were like, the other guys were like, yeah, sure. No, it's all good.
As long as you promise not to make guns. And then they, you know.
No, they are still making guns. They're not supposed to sell the guns. The Germans can't sell their guns. But the Germans sell it to the Netherlands. They sell it to Belgium. They sell it to the other European countries.
But I don't even know why Germany is blamed in this whole thing. They're supposed to put all those bans on Austria. They're the one that produced them.
Okay. They were the ones that allowed that guy to walk across the border.
Through immigration?
They were the ones that allowed that guy to walk across the border. So they're supposed to say, listen,
you don't know who he's crossing.
We don't want crazy Austrians. But yeah, so it would be, if we follow the EU template,
yeah,
it would be easy to do so.
Yeah. Just focus on economics. Politics, yeah. No.
Because it would be easy to come together and say, hey, listen, okay, Helmut, what does your country manufacture the most in? And you would say, okay, I'm a we produce quite a lot of potatoes, you know. And then you ask me, okay, Dwight, what do you produce? And I would say, you know what, I'm a red meat producer. Mm-hmm. I export a lot of red meat. And you're like, okay, so let's help each other out in terms of alleviating a common evil, food insecurity across the continent.
Yeah.
You do things like that. Or you approach, for example, like in the Namibian context and the South African context and the Botswanan context, three countries that are heavy on environmental protection. Oh, these three countries in Southern Africa are heavy on environmental protection. Why does the rest of Africa not learn from them? Mm-hmm. What can be learned? Oh, you need to get legislation in order. You need to get this. You establish a common continent-wide entity. Stuff like that, you know, achieve a certain particular instruments, put them in place. Voila. Mm-hmm. And all of that is economic. But like I said in last week, we still have to satisfy the discussion of bringing back that policy of the silencing the guns, because now that I think about it, so our president flies to a country that's once again almost returning back to its civil war status of 2020.
Ethiopia. Yeah.
And do you know what's the issue with supposedly in that region, the Tigray region,
yeah,
that had the conflict last time?
I remember, you know, they decided to go full swag with their prime minister in a military outfit.
It's
put on frontline stuff like that.
It's supposedly because the prime minister, Abiy Ahmed, and remember this is just the Wikipedia entry that I read to try and get the backstory understanding about what was going on there, was that they didn't like Abiy Ahmed, the provincial government.
Yeah.
Okay, at the heart of this, let me explain it like this. So Abiy Ahmed is from a ruling party.
So it's politics.
Yes, once again, politics. Now, before Abiy Ahmed, who was a former military head, he's prime minister, remember?
Yeah.
So there's a president. Before Abiy Ahmed won or got into office as prime minister of Ethiopia with his political party, the guys that are from Tigray, the political party that comes from Tigray.
Yeah.
And remember, this is not politics on ethnicity.
It's always on ethnicity.
This particular party had been in charge of running Ethiopia for a very long time. For like 20 years or something like that. Yeah. And this is after, what was that socialist ruler they had, Mengistu? That guy from the 80s?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember Mengistu.
Mm-hmm.
So Mengistu was also like a Pol Pot situation.
Oh boy.
So, and for anyone had advanced, you know, thinking in the 80s and the 90s, you guys would also remember Mengistu. So at one stage, Mengistu was also responsible for once again allowing the country to fall into some sort of a civil war situation,
yeah,
where a bunch of Ethiopians also literally ran away from their country. There's a few that came here to Namibia. I met some of them once at one stage. But yeah, so at the heart of that particular discussion is also understanding that what fuels conflict on the African continent,
yeah,
has been control of the extractive industries. We see it in Sudan, golden oil being sold to, what's that country's name?
It's the UAE.
The UAE. We see it specifically with Niger, Burkina Faso, and Mali.
Yeah.
We see it with the
DRC.
With DRC. We see it with the misunderstanding regarding how, you know, the world tries to help Africa with its own particular governance issues.
Yeah.
We see it, for example, even in this discussion of the international tax framework discussion, where at the heart of this has been, let's find a common ground where it supports the individual tax frameworks you find in a country. Now, remember, Helmut, this thing is not there to replace your tax framework in your country.
No.
It's not there to replace Namibia's tax laws. It's not there to replace the tax law commonality between Namibia and South Africa. It's not there to replace any of the particular statutes that we would have, which are also, once again, the laws. It's just there to enhance these existing legislation and also to help the countries if they wish to pursue an offender of local tax law,
mm-hmm.
who decides then to go and act to gallivant in the international realm, say, hey, listen, I'm from this country. I'm not from that country. I don't respect that country's laws. I don't have to adhere to their laws. So you can't pursue me in this country.
Yeah. Like extradition and treaties.
Almost like that.
Yeah. Now, I totally understand why the UN is, just doesn't want to let this whole international tax legislations, more like international tax legislations discussion, like to run it on an institutional level in the same way that we run, we look at health. Both on, as individual countries, they all have their Ministry of Health, but on a global level, as, especially for UN member states, we have the World Health Organization.
Mm.
And you have, the International Labour Organization, you have World Trade Organization, all these organizations, each and every country have they are doing their own separate things, but they have an international body that represents them on a UN level.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, one thing that all UN member states are looking at, one of the goals that they would like to achieve is development. They have, you have 17 SDGs that we would like to accomplish, and one of them is goal number 16. Now, this is to promote just, peaceful, and inclusive societies. Just, peaceful, and inclusive societies. Now, inclusivity, I think this is where you see that you want to establish all this, you want to establish an institution that will make it very easy, very difficult for illicit financing.
Mm.
Yeah. Because, well, it turns out that is a multi-billion dollar institution. Yeah, more like that's a multi-billion dollar operations that's basically being run per year.
Yeah.
According to the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime, in 2020 they produced a conceptual framework for the statistical measurement on illicit financial flows. Now these reports, they don't, weird enough, do conduct a lot of researches. Now, which you'd think there'll be a priority, it turns out no. Now, until you look at, first of all, if you look at the 2013, Panama Papers, which were blown open, just look at the culprits, and then you'll see, you'll understand why. A lot of people that are involved in this crime are not your ordinary Tura boys.
Mm.
Yeah. These are your Klein Akupe boys, and Klein Windhoek boys, Ludwigsdorf boys. Yeah. So.
Who are you trying to implicate, Amut?
I don't want to mention any names.
Who are you trying to? You never know. The Tura boys can be, the Tura boys can be, they can be graduates into that league, and then they eventually just move across the road into Eros.
Look, man.
Yeah.
I tried to follow the oil road bail application this week.
Yeah.
And
this week or last week?
Last week.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was one gentleman who was captured sitting, in a picture, sitting next to Mulunga.
Mm.
That guy looked innocent.
I know which guy.
One, he looked broke. Two, he looked innocent.
I'm like, there is no way.
Look, that guy should have been given bail. It's either he's very good at hiding his money, or bro is innocent at this point.
Or he's very good at acting the part.
It could be that.
Yeah.
Now, if he's good at, if he's just acting the part, then someone hand the man a trophy. A Grammy. Now, according to the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime 2021 report on illicit financing, Every year, organized crime and trade in illegal goods such as drugs, drug trafficking and trafficking in firearms, throw human trafficking in there, and illegal or illicit tax and commercial practices generate billions of dollars in illicit flow. Proceeds of crime may be channeled abroad, often to safe havens. And they have, they may also be laundered and reinvested into legal markets. That's the washing now that you're talking about.
Mm.
Billions. That's a lot of money. And the perpetrators have a lot of power and influence, which makes policing this crime not a very easy task to deal with.
No, it won't. It won't
now,
become easy.
Now, all that money. Now, the point I'm making when it comes to why I totally understand why the UN is very invested in the creation of this institution is that this is the money that is needed, not the illegal one. First of all, if you are going to run, take for example, going back to goals, SDG goal 16, promote just peaceful and inclusive societies. If you have human trafficking, there is no peace in there.
Yeah.
Inclusivity out through the window. And now the promotion of both inclusivity and peace again out through the window.
Yeah.
Now, financing for development. Financing for development requires a lot of money. Most of it is channeled to tax havens. So it really impacts the implementation of SDGs, which again, helps explain the language that was used by the Secretary General Antonio Guterres on the state of SDG progression back in 2023. It makes for 2024 when he said it makes for a sobering reading.
Mm. I wonder what this year's one's going to sound like. Are they going to give it to the economists once again?
Last year, those guys sugarcoated a bunch of things.
Man, I was so disappointed. Because I was also once again looking forward. Okay, so did we at least improve from sobering reading in 2024 to get to 2025? Oh my goodness. It's just Jeffrey Sachs and his brass writing just technical language. And it was a lot thicker than the 2024 version.
Just telling you not to worry.
It was really thicker than the 2024 version,
the
2025 version of that report. But yeah, 2026, it's also the last year of Guterres
in office because
Rafael Grossi from IAEA, who makes a statement and then the next day Israel attacks Iran.
I don't know where the UN is headed with Grossi, but no offense to the guy, but okay, maybe I spend a lot of time looking at people like who is this? I didn't follow Boutros Ghali of Egypt that much. I started sort of like taking interest in more often how the organization operate from Ban Ki-moon to Kofi Annan.
Well,
that's when
I think Namibia embarrassed itself under Ban Ki-moon. Remember the guy that attacked Ban Ki-moon here at the UN head office? Do you know where I was actually that day? I had to go to another particular function. It was a client's function. And then the journalists came back that time, back to their department. They were like, did you hear, guys? Ban Ki-moon was attacked by a weirdo there at the head office here.
Really?
Yeah. It happened that 2015 or that 2016, one of the 2 years. And then later that night, I go to class because I had classes. I go to class and everyone is talking about the guy that attacked Ban Ki-moon. So the reason for the attack was this person was a South African who thought...
Hate Nigerians?
No. He was some sort of a Palestinian activist in support of Palestine.
Yeah.
And when they heard that Ban Ki-moon was coming to Namibia, he came to Namibia from South Africa, from Cape Town.
That's one heck of a trip to make.
Just to come and...
Go to jail.
Yeah, in Namibia. Yeah. I still wonder what happened to that guy. But yeah, that was the only only scenario where Namibia was embarrassed, literally. I mean, you've got a South African coming to your country just to come and attack Bunny.
Like you had a lot of times where you could have come to the realization this is a dumb idea.
No, he didn't care. He wanted to literally publicize the discussion of the Palestine effort. But here's the situation also. Namibia is literally a baby of the United Nations.
Yeah.
And I say literally a baby.
Resolution 435.
Yeah, because we were literally based upon a decision. But it makes things weird. Now, I don't want to jump the gun with this next statement, but when we are going to have the cybersecurity discussion, Hamid, later in this week or whenever when we decide just on when that discussion takes place, it is frustrating to wait upon UN decisions so that you can have a local law about a development in your country. Meaning, Namibia already has tax legislation. Namibia already has tax laws.
Yeah.
And we already have tax frameworks active in Namibia, which all tax stakeholders are taking in place and, you know, participating in. I'm obviously assuming that they are participating at the best of their abilities.
Mm-hmm.
And I will keep it there because you get the degrees of abilities. The conversation that I now realized after Friday's engagement with the MICT and public stakeholders engagement about the drafting of the cybersecurity or the cybercrime bill was, and we did not know this. You could literally also see from the other people in the audience, we did not know that Namibia was participating in a convention, in a UN convention about cybercrime or cybersecurity. So we first went and participated in a function since 2024,
mm-hmm.
while the conversation was silent on where is the cybercrime bill. Remember, we had Rosvita here last year.
Yeah.
We had, what's her name? I almost said Juliet.
Why do we have Ndumbo on?
Ndumbo was also on the, I think on the data protection.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had, what was the name? Juliet or Julia on cybersecurity. But that was from an African perspective because she participated on an African perspective.
Mm.
No, that wasn't last year. That was the previous year, 2024. And for both of them, the conclusion that we could derive for our listeners was we don't know. No one knows for sure because civil society asks questions directly from their points of contact. Obviously, for us, I mean, you can just ask HD specifically, Hamoud, his frustration upon in terms of dealing with the people from MICT when asking a question about something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you ask to inquire about something so that you can write an article or share knowledge with the reader or with listener.
On how far things have gone.
Yeah, on something. Just ask HD on his frustration in dealing with the MICT squad. I say the MICT squad primarily because they're not forthcoming in divulging information.
Mm.
And at the heart of this particular discussion was that this framework, you don't see actively Namibia participating in this framework, this tax framework, this UN tax framework. But Namibia has been known for having loopholes in its tax framework specifically, and even its legislation, its financial legislation, with the FATF discussion. And for anyone that has seen our social media posts, that Namibia could be off the grey list in this year of 2025, because the FATF, the task force, seems to be satisfied with our work. I just don't see where that comment was made. I still have to ask our colleague, David, where he got that comment from. Mm. But it seems like, you know, Namibia is sorting out certain things, but Namibia is taking place in absentia on a platform in New York or in Geneva. And we don't know
are we waiting for something from this platform to amend legislation first in Namibia? Or why can't we just amend legislation in Namibia first and then see how this legislation fits into these UN frameworks? Because the UN, the founding statement or the founding resolution on this framework for them to start with this tax convention framework was that the first sentence in that one statement said, we recognize tax sovereignty of all the individual countries.
Yeah.
This is not supposed to replace the tax legislation that is currently acting in a country. It's like the EITI discussion we had.
Exactly. That's what, that's what I was about to say.
The Mauritanian guy said, you know what? I don't need to adopt the whole thing.
Thank you very much for the template.
Because the template helps.
Yeah.
It's a lovely tool. It helps me to run the other guys. It's actually a very devious politician.
Very devious.
Politician. Like, but yeah. But before we continue, let's quickly take a live read. Vereeniging University for the 2026 applications that are now extended for the Faculty of Health Sciences. For the following programs, Certificate in Health Science Foundation, Diploma in Environmental Health Science, Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing, Postgraduate Diploma in Mental Health, Postgraduate Diploma in Occupational Health and Safety, Master of Science in Occupational Health and Safety, and the Master of Public Health. For more information, call 081-403-6406. Belvedere University, where everyone is an achiever.
And the time is 15 minutes left to the hour of 6. If you just tuned in, this is Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. And today's discussion is based on the United Nations Framework Convention on International Tax Cooperation, the establishment of an international UN-level recognized body to basically represent member countries' tax legislations, not to replace them, to represent them in a way that the World Health Organization represents UN member states on health matters on an international level. But before we continue, we are going to take a short break.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukurile oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuana onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa ninge Fata Fanona, Monica, Ko, Eagle FM, Honora Tatime, Bali Heali, Nola Natu, Heali Bali No Heali, Ileko Berewa, Nora Hetatu Natu, Bali O Hetatu Watatu, Oma Felane, Eagle FM, The Eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, The Eye.
Welcome back. 13 minutes to the hour of 6. We're still with the United Nations international tax discussion. Now, the African Union back in The African Union back in 2023 put up a document that's based, I think, on the based on a joint document that they put together. That's all the African states through the African Union put together, and they recommended the changes to the international inclusive changes to any, you know, international establishment in terms of taxes are going to be made, to include like not just in the amendments or the establishment of the institution, but also to include developing countries, because you have to understand illicit financial flows also takes place in developing countries. Because if you have seen the Panama Papers, there are a lot of faces in those papers. A lot of names. Now, the United Nations General Assembly member states have voted with a majority of 125 in favor of adopting Convention on International Tax Cooperation. Now, this is from the African Union back in 2023. A resolution tabled by the African group under the title of Promotion of Inclusive and Effective International Tax Cooperation in the United Nations. I think this resolution was made in 2021, 2022, somewhere there.
Mm.
By the African Union. And in 2023, it was voted on by the United Nations, at the United Nations General Assembly, and the African Union described it as marking a historic moment for Africa and the world. The resolution, which was tabled, was passed with 125 vote in favor of tax convention, with 48 votes against and 9 abstaining. I can think of a few that abstained. I know they are developed. This unprecedented step represents a significant advance, showcasing the ages collective dedication to global tax reform and paving the way for more equitable and effective global tax system. Yeah, and then they go on to point out as how this will be good for Agenda 2063. I'm like, huh? Okay, now you guys are smoking something. But the inclusivity discussion is going to, this is slowly going to be the UN Charter over again. Invading another country is against Article 2 of the UN Charter, and countries invade each other anyway.
Well, like 3 January
each like
other.
They 3 January each other. Like, enforcement mechanism, like, because you can come up with a, you know, you can come up with an institution. It's very easy. That's why, you know, look, it's going to sound very superb on paper.
Yeah.
But the enforcement mechanism, because it's not meant to interfere with your national tax laws.
No.
No.
It's supposed to enhance them.
Exactly, enhance them. But, enhancement and in enhancement is, that's going to be very subjective. Do you want it or not? Like Mauritania told the EITA, like, you know what? This is an excellent template. I'll just adopt it and actually just run the transparency initiative myself. That rings a lot of...
Or to my way. I run it to my way.
In other words, there's something I don't want you seeing.
However, I'm glad that you brought me this thing.
Yeah.
Because now I can control people with this thing. Which doesn't really look transparent.
That's not transparent.
Because it technically means there's one person playing a boss for no reason on rules.
Mm-hmm.
But the person is also a player. You know, it's the kid that we all knew while we played street football who owns the ball.
Who owns the ball.
So that kid is the ref, the team, the coach.
The manager. Remember, they're not allowed to lose.
Yeah.
And they have the final say. They're also the...
They're also the final say on whether a goal stands or not. I remember all that democracy we had to go through. You know. Have you ever seen people argue legitimately about a goal, Helmut?
Human beings are just...
No, not legitimately. They argue about a legitimate goal. Just because the team that represents the ball owner is like, nah, we don't recognize your goal.
Yeah.
Because the goalie is like this short. And the ball was literally just like, no, that's too high for the goalie to save. That's such a ridiculous thing.
Now, whose problem is that?
But we were all kids. Don't you see the dilemma? There is no crossbar.
you do realize human beings are just human beings, right?
I know.
Like, we are very biased, like, at any age.
And we will argue, well, if you were that young, you will argue about anything.
Mm-hmm.
About anything. But, okay, yeah. The nice thing is also, Helmut, that literally this tax convention is not ending. However, I have seen worrying discussions taking place specifically in this platform.
The tax convention discussion?
Yeah. Do you remember the minutes that I mentioned at the start of our talk? The minutes that showed how the countries were negotiating with each other about what should be in the draft and so on. So the current phase, which was the last meeting time frame, which ended last week, but it started from the week before ending into last week,
yeah,
was that they were debating and negotiating about non-governmental organizations, mm-hmm, and large organizations and entities to participate in this global tax framework discussion,
yeah,
which makes things peculiar, because remember, an auditing firm or an accounting firm, and they are three big ones across the world, Ernst & Young, KPMG, and PricewaterhouseCoopers. They were actually the big four, but now they're just the big three. These three companies obviously have got a wide network for tax consultancy. And Deloitte, yes, Deloitte is the other one.
Mm-hmm.
For tax consultancy and, you know, advice. This is across the world. And at the heart of this has been the recent controversy that those three of the four organizations encountered recently, specifically like within India, what happened in India, where the Indian government was on the verge of literally discrediting auditing firms, specifically accounting and auditing firms, regarding, you know, how they are non-compliant. They literally commit some sort of a fraudulent crime or crime related to fraud,
yeah,
based upon the reporting mechanisms that are that they use specifically, as well as also their particular role in firstly defending the interests of their clients versus, mm-hmm, complying to the interests or complying to the laws of the country. So at the heart of this is also the tax and the accounting and auditing firms, who also have to play a role. And that was primarily some of the debating that took place for the last round back in last week and the week before. Because we also have to, and remember, it was a good thing, this debating was based upon civil society, large entities and organizations to participate in the framework.
Yeah.
Now, civil society currently is trying to understand specifically, you know, for example, how concepts like double taxation take place and,
yeah,
these other aspects that emanate from tax law and not from accounting and the discipline of accounting itself. Now, why do I say this? Well, you can literally see, for example, the recent civil society discussion that the IBBR and EITI jointly held 2 weeks back as well, that at the heart of this discussion, people yet have not dealt with or spoken to accounting experts, consultants, and the auditing firms. Here's the thing, Helmut.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the Ministry of Finance that is the issue, or even NAMRA that would be an issue. They give their requirements for what a company should report on and then subsequently pay for. And these companies use auditing firms. So, for example, the conversation that took place today, folks, here in Droombos, between the parliamentarians and the private sector, from the mining sector, private sector representatives and there was only one civil society representation, which was the other organizer of the event alongside the Parliament of Namibia. But they're not actually civil society because they are an NGO from another country.
Yeah.
was that in that room we didn't have civil society. Was in that room you didn't hear about how does decent work get impeded by, for example, the kinds of money that is reported. Because you didn't see the accountants in the room. But the executives of the mines were in the room. And the executives of the mines will just, they will take what was said there, pack up the bags, because it ended now at 5, I think. Yeah, it ended now at 5, that whole discussion, because it was the whole day.
Yeah.
And then they will go back to their boardrooms. They will go call, make a phone call. They will tell their financial manager, listen, call the firm that we have an accounting contract with, call that firm, and let them advise us on the legislations in the country. There's nothing wrong with that. That's business. That's how business gets run. Okay, before we actually conclude, let me quickly take a live read again. Vita University, where the 2026 applications are now extended for the Faculty of Health Sciences for the following courses. Certificate in Health Science Foundation, Diploma in Environmental Health Science, Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing, Postgraduate Diploma in Mental Health, Postgraduate Diploma in Occupational Health and Safety, Master of Science in Occupational Health and Safety, and the Master of Public Health. For more information, call 081-403-6406. Velvica University, where everyone is an achiever. So yeah, so they will just go and call their financial manager. Financial manager sets up a meeting with the consulting firm that gives them accounting services and auditing services. And then they consult on their way out there from there. And at the heart of that, in the private sector, you've got to prove how are you going to save money for your client.
In the 2010 documentary called It Was an Inside Job, which is based on the 2008 financial crisis, which with more focus on Iceland.
Yeah.
It starts with with the auditing firms like KPMG, how they showed up and how they didn't really show up in Iceland per se.
Yeah.
But first of all, there were about two or three state owned commercial bank, call them commercial banks.
Yeah.
And those banks, some rich guys came from somewhere outside of Iceland, mostly, western part of the world, and they bought them and then privatized them. These guys were conducting some of the riskiest investments, but auditing firms like that kept giving them the AAA ratings.
Mm.
And then while they were just hiding a bubble that busted back in 2008 and then basically sank the global economy, including the economy of the country, obviously, they were operating. Now, a lot of local operators that they were in cahoot with were just flying first class or flying just straight up, private jet. So there were very few people that acquired a lot of money from all those deliberate failures.
Mm-hmm.
Now, not actually deliberate failures, deliberate activities, because they, these are experts in the field of, in everything finance. So if they make, not just one, but a series of faulty or risky investments that leads up to, contributes to a large scale global economic catastrophe, then that was just done for, self-serving type of interest.
Mm.
So, as much as international organizations are good, but when it comes to who to serve, whether they should serve the the clients or the shareholders, as in just maximize profit, a lot of them will take the direction of maximizing profit. Unfortunately,
yeah.
And now, when it comes to this whole tax discussion, who are you going to run to? Because you have to understand, even though these guys have made, are known to make very questionable financial decisions in terms of investment, those investments are just risky mostly for the clients, but not for them. Believe me, they have done the math.
Yeah.
So these are the people that you know, these are the groups that we're supposed to go to on an international level to ask for financial advice. But they have a track record like that. Unfortunately. So solving this problem is going to be somewhat very tricky. Like, well, like you can see with the, you know, with the Jeffrey Epstein and Prince Andrew. Like, well, despite all the documentations coming out, you know, all the more like connection coming out of the Epstein files. You know, one of the biggest punishment he was given, he was stripped of his prince title. Really? That's a punishment?
And he still holds on to his monies and everything. He's not even arrested yet.
What a punishment that will be.
He still lives in the property. He still gets his particular benefits. There's technically no real punishment. He just lost his label to Prince.
Who cares?
But that is the concern. The people obviously want justice because he benefited from certain dubious activities.
So what are we supposed to say? Oh my God, he lost his title. How pitiful are we? That's so painful. Really? I don't think there's a victim that will go like, okay, I mean, he lost his title. That should be enough.
I am satisfied.
No.
No. They won't. They're not satisfied.
So if you have a title, you can just go around committing crimes because you know that the worst you're going to face in terms of justice is just you lose your title. That's it.
And still hold on to your investments.
Yeah, exactly.
Which would still be stored in some very nice tax havens that, you know, just give you maximum benefit.
You'll only go to jail if you don't have a title to lose.
Yeah.
Who came up with this nonsense? 5 minutes into the hour of business and economics.
The guys who make decisions, Ahmed. The guys who make
just
decisions.
Just make money. Everything is legal. Just make money.
The guys who make decisions, they came up with these things.
Yeah. Until tomorrow?
Same time, same place, guys. Yeah. Enjoy the rest of your programming in our company. It's business and economics segment after this.